Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
No, I'm not Saran Petro today. He will be back tomorrow. Danny Klinkscale with Curtis Seabolt and Fast Talkin' Rob on the program today. And we'll start off the two-minute drill in Philadelphia with Philly Billy Werndell, WCHE. Eagles continue to look excellent, Philly Billy, and not much to complain about from them. They are clicking on all cylinders.
You know, it's amazing. Yesterday I was down in Dallas for the game, and the Eagles had opportunities to score after they got two turnovers, and they failed to score a field goal or a touchdown. And I figure, wow, this is going to be a long night. We might win the game against the depleted Cowboys. But, boy, they came out in the second half, and they just took it to the Cowboys. And it's amazing. It wasn't the Carson Wentz show. He made some contributions, but they ran the ball very effectively. He made some key passes. Alshon Jeffries had one of his better games. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, they're 9-1, best record in the National Football League. I thought they had a chance to win 10 games this year, but they're going to surpass that because they still have the Giants, they have Oakland, they have a tough road trip to the Rams and Seattle, and they have the Bears this week, but it's just amazing, this team.
If you were going to look at one area where that might trip them up, or is it just the thought that they're clicking on all cylinders and you're just worrying about peaking too soon?
Well, the one thing that concerns me a little bit, of course he got hurt yesterday, was Jake Elliott. And he's been a little inconsistent with his extra points, and he's been a little inconsistent with the field goals. So that concerns me a little bit. Not a great deal, but it does concern me. The offensive line. You lose Jason Peters. Now, I'm not going to say Vitae, the left tackle, is Jason Peters, but he's done a pretty good job. I mean, I think the big question mark would be, can they stay healthy the rest of the year, especially the quarterback?
Philadelphia 7.
If he goes down, it's all bets are off.
Well, that's usually the case for most teams in the NFL. And if it wasn't the case, then probably your quarterback's not so good. So I guess you look at it.
I mean, Nick Foles is a backup. Could he beat a giant team? Yeah. Could he beat, the weaker teams if they play down the stretch? Yeah. But I don't think Nick Foles is a quarterback that you want to go in the playoffs with. That's what scares the hell out of me.
If that's the flaw, then just about every team that's a contender has it. So
look what happened to the Packers with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, exactly.
They can't even score a point
right
against the Ravens.
Let's talk about.
I mean, you're right about that. But Wentz is the guy that really stirs the drink.
Right. Let's talk about the Sixers. Generally good ball, but they do blow a big lead last week. Marco Fulks has been out of the lineup, but he's progressing. What's the story for the Sixers right now?
Well, when you have a monster like Embiid, and you guys are very familiar out in Kansas City with him, I mean, this guy could be a great, great player. The other night, he had 46 points and 18 rebounds. You have to go back to the days of Wilt Chamberlain putting up those kind of numbers. And Embiid and Ben Simmons has really taken the league by storm. He's got to get a little better with his outside shot. They've got a pretty solid team. I think they could be a 6 or 7 seed this year, maybe even higher in the Eastern Conference. But they're a good team. Markelle Fultz, I think they might redshirt him like they redshirted Ben Simmons last year. It's amazing. Just amazing what they do.
How's the city taking to this team? They certainly seem to be a lovable type team. They've got a lot of social media antics and stuff like that. So how's the city liking them?
The city is embracing them. Of course, this has never been a great basketball city. Even when the Sixers were great, even when Wilt Chamberlain played for the Warriors way back when, this has been a tough sell for pro basketball in this town. You'll say, well, you have six major college basketball teams.
Right.
It's never embraced the NBA for some reason. Only during the Iverson era, when Pat Croce owned the team, they were able to get the public on board, but it's always been a hard sell.
Philly Billy, we appreciate the time always. Enjoy it.
Thank you, and hopefully we can keep it rolling with the Eagles.
I think you probably can.
Right, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot.
It's that New Orleans.
And let's head to New Orleans right now and go with Gus Kattengill. He is at ESPN 100.3, and the Saints down 18. Drew Brees rallies the forces against the Redskins and gets a win that's really the kind of win you get when it's a special season. Is there that kind of feeling in New Orleans?
Man, I literally asked that question during the post-game show yesterday, and I didn't want to hear your guest there say that things are rolling for Philly. Now they're a good team. They've been consistent all season. The Saints every week have been consistently getting better, so that's something that we have seen. Yesterday was really the one game where you just didn't have that sense of, energy at the beginning of the game. And quite honestly, you know, I agree with Sean Payton at the end of the game. He said, look, there's no victory Monday today. Players are going to come in like they lost the game, not they won it. Because for two-thirds or just over that, they were not the better team on the field. I thought Coach Gruden and the staff did a tremendous job of game planning. Everything the Saints did, it almost felt like they had the playbook. I mean, like, I was at the point where I was conspiracy theorist guy. I was like, you know, John Gruden always hangs out at camp and knows Sean or not. What if he called Jay? Because I'm serious. Every screen pass to Kamara got blown up a la Reggie versus the Eagles in the playoffs. I mean, Drew Brees looked lost. The offensive line had not played that poorly all season. I mean, well, you have to go back to me. Even the Patriots and Vikings, you never felt like Drew Brees was under duress every play. And, you know, the running game wasn't going. It was just offensively they knew where to go. They looked like they knew every blitz that was coming. And then you had the injuries the Saints were having yesterday going into that game. And it just seemed like, all right, okay, fine, here goes the streak. And somehow, man, they won the game. It's unbelievable. 15 down with under three to play, and you tie the game, and all of a sudden Brees is Brees again, right? I mean, he was missing bad passes, making mistakes that's un-Brees-like. And then he goes 11 for 11 for 164 in the last two drives to tie the game with a two-point conversion. And, you know, now they're talking about it being a magical win.
No doubt about that. The team has been really great since the Adrian Peterson trade, and they have run the ball better without him, obviously, than they have with him. Is that seen as some kind of turning point?
It is on this aspect of it. I think it simplified the game plan and you know what to do. Drew Brees talks about it all the time, and I agree with him. The backs are interchangeable in that you can run the screen with both backs. You can run between the guards and tackles with both backs. You can toss it to them. Kamara gives you a few more things. As you saw in the two-point conversion play in the touchdown, the guy's a fantastic pass catcher. It's why they drafted him. They traded next year's second-round pick to go get him. So they knew what they were getting, and they wanted him. Remember, unlike the NBA, you know, the NFL, you have free agency, then the draft. If they knew they were going to get Kamara, they wouldn't have gone after Adrian Peterson. Sean Payton wanted a double-headed monster in that backfield, wanted to run the football a lot more. Once you come in there, they try to give it a go with three backs. It didn't make any sense. I never saw how Peterson could fit that offense because when he came in, he's the running back. Right now, if Ingram or if Kamara goes in, you really don't know what's going to happen. And you saw yesterday Ingram, two plays, 20 and 31 yards, the two carries in overtime that got him the game-winning field goal. That's what he's done all year. So when you take a look at those two backs, you know, I've been using the analogy here in New Orleans. It's the Falcons of last year. I know Julio Jones gets a ton of pub elsewhere, but if you watched that team and you saw their run last year in the Super Bowl, Atlanta is where they are last year and this year because of their running backs. Freeman's been injured. Coleman's been injured. They haven't been as effective. That's why Atlanta's struggling. Bottom line, you see the two backs the Saints have. Brees, before this game, he had 40-something attempts yesterday. But before that, it was 29, 27, 25 pass attempts. And they were all wins for the Saints.
Where's the belief of the fans? It's been a while since the team has been good. They've been kind of lackluster for a few years now. Mm-hmm. Most of the fans are young enough or have been around since the Super Bowl championship. What is there a belief that this team has the goods to do something like that?
I'll tell you what, yesterday you looked around in the dome and it was disbelief and people were high-fiving and you started getting that sense of feeling. Ironically, you go back to the 2009 season Robert Meacham, who led the Who Dat chant, something that the Saints do at a home game. They pick somebody, either a current player or former player, go out to a 30-yard line, raise his fist, drop it. Crowd does three Who Dats in a row. He did it yesterday. Well, in 2009, he was the guy that turned the game around. Breeze picked off. On the run back, Meacham strips the Redskins defender and then takes it to the house for a touchdown, turning the game completely around. And Washington misses a field goal late. Saints come back and win it in overtime. It was a miracle win then in that season. And I think after that game, people around here said, okay, look, you know what? It just might be your season because that shouldn't have happened. Well, after yesterday, I can tell you it's hilarious because this is one of those games where I'm telling you today, water cooler, Jim, everyone saw the game. Everyone saw the comeback. Everyone was at the dome, right? Wrong. I'm telling you, people were leaving there. And people called the post-game show and said, yeah, I left. I left when it was 15 down. I mean, my dad was like, yeah, you know, I turned it off. I'm telling you, people didn't see the final comeback. So I think now people are going, maybe this is a special season. Right. I don't know how special it might be.
Gus Kattengill, ESPN 100.3, thanks for the time.
For sure, man. Thank you.
All right. Colorado. Let's move on to Denver and Josh Dover from Altitude 950. Broncos are in the tank, to say the least. A once promising start to this season has dissipated into complete disarray, and they just look worse and worse and worse. Maybe we have lost Josh, or he didn't hear me. Josh?
Yeah, I got you. There you go.
Okay, there we go. Thanks a lot. It's going from bad to worse for the Broncos right now.
Yeah, it is. It has gone from a really bad to absolutely terrible and a bad product on the football field in just 6 weeks or so. And it's getting to all-time franchise bad. The most games lost in a row for the Broncos is 9 back in 1967. That's certainly something that you can see this team getting to as this losing streak continues. And today they'll fire offensive coordinator Mike McCoy, who kind of falls on the sword for those games that they've lost in a row. But he may be a part of the problem, but there is a big problem with the Denver Broncos, and it's not just Mike McCoy.
Certainly isn't. And, you know, the defense has had their bad moments, but still, like even yesterday, it wasn't, some kind of cavalcade to the end zone. It's hard not to imagine that there's some division in the team. Is it visible?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think they're going to say it, Danny, because that's something we experienced last year, and I'm sure from the outside looking in, you guys you watched it as well. Pushing a guy on a special teams mishap, Russell Okung tries to kind of step up and speak on behalf of the offense last season in the locker room, and it gets into a shoving match with Aqib Talib. It's hard not to think there's some sort of division. We know how good the defense can be and is or was up until kind of the demoralizing point that they've had now. And if we know it and we're watching it every single week, well, it's pretty obvious that the players know it, the players can feel it, and they probably have that sense of division even more. Now, they're going to be smart, and we're not going to hear it like we did last year. But, man, Danny, to be a fly on the wall in a locker room where just the defensive guys are talking, that would be interesting.
Well, the one thing they have to comment on is, and did yesterday and weren't happy about it, and football players never are in a position where they're going to like it, is that John Elway called the team soft, and that's about the worst thing you can say about a football team.
Yeah, and guys said that, you know, Chris Harris Jr. saying it after the game, hey, I'm not soft. Brandon Marshall saying after the game, I'm not soft. Really the only guys, and this may go to what you were just saying, Danny, the only guys that kind of subdued or agreed with John were dudes on the offense. Demaryius Thomas said, we are soft. Now, Demaryius Thomas has his fair share of hate tweets sent his way every time he drops the ball here in Denver, so I'm sure fans won't be too surprised by him kind of deciding, but I think that's what you want to hear, right? If the Broncos come out and say, all of them say, yeah, we are soft, then, I mean, that's a big issue. Look, I'm a weekend warrior, man. I play in my basketball rec leagues, and I take offense to somebody calling me soft, so let alone a professional athlete.
No doubt about that. So that's something that never goes over well. Nuggets lose Paul Millsap. He was their big acquisition in the offseason. The fans, any level of care about the Nuggets right now?
You know, it's really starting to pick up some steam. I mean, this town out here in Denver, the Broncos town, first and foremost, and it will continue to be. But, I mean, it's a bad product. It's what we're talking about. It's It's interesting. Yesterday, we cover the games and go to the games, and I have friends that go to the games as fans. And a handful of friends had hit me up yesterday saying, hey, I made it to the game. I got some discounted tickets. Let's all hang out at halftime. And just friends that wouldn't spend the money on tickets because they're so expensive. So I think some interest is starting to look away from the Broncos because they are so bad. Right. And if the Nuggets can make a run, do some damage, they didn't help themselves in any way last year getting beat by a bad Lakers team. But I think they have an opportunity to run with kind of the Denver sports fans right now. They just have to take it.
Josh, we appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, Danny, thanks for having me on.
All right, Josh Dover from 950 The Altitude in Denver.
California, here we come, right back where we started from.
And let's move on to Cali and Roxy Bernstein, 95.7 The Game. Raiders lose and don't look good doing it. It was kind of a litmus test type of game. They obviously had a very, very challenging schedule ahead of them. This game was a quote-unquote home game, but the Patriots, more Patriots or more Raiders not playing well?
Danny, I think it's a combination of both, to be honest with you. I think it's pretty telling. The Raiders came out and looked this poor considering they were coming off a bye. And they just made way too many mistakes, and you can't do that against New England. And defensively, they just couldn't stop them. And that's been an ongoing problem for the Raiders is defensively, but we knew that was going to be an issue all season. But the offense would only come up with one late touchdown when it seemed the game was over. It's really disappointing for the Raiders to see them, knowing their season was on the line, their backs are against the wall, coming off a bye and to play like that is troubling for this football team.
When, you know, Derek Carr has been good, I think he takes what's given to him. And I was doing a post-game show while I was watching the Raiders game, so I can't say that I was seeing every second of it intently. But it seems like when I've watched the Raiders play this year, he's getting a little greedy, it seems like. He wants to make big plays all the time. Now, it worked against the Chiefs. He just kept firing, and it ended up paying off for him. Do you see any of that, or is that just a fact that oftentimes they're trailing?
I think that's part of it. I think maybe there's some frustration from Carr where he's just going to rear back and let it rip. But that's also a little bit of his MO as a quarterback. But for the Raiders, the problem is, okay, the turnovers and certainly interception numbers are up for Carr from a year ago. Keep in mind, the schedule's harder than it was for the Raiders last year. And they benefited from that, and they won all the close games last year. This year, they just have not found a way for the most part, other than, you know, a handful of games like the Chiefs game that came down literally to the final play of the game. And I think the frustrating thing is that yesterday Marshawn Lynch looked the best I think he's looked all year, to be honest with you.
Yep.
He ran the ball pretty well for the Raiders. They just didn't have much else behind it. And the passing game, it was disappointing to see that they weren't able to consistently put any drives together. There were some turnovers. There were some drops. It just was a miserable day all around for the Raiders, and it's not going to get any easier. Okay, yeah, you're not playing New England again, but if you look at the Raiders' schedule here down the stretch, and they got Denver this week, but it's a very difficult schedule for them, and they now have literally no margin for error. This was a team that people were expecting to contend for the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year, and look where they are now. This is not that football team.
Well, however, the second wildcard team is a 500 football team right now, and it seems like that may be in play at the end of the season. So is there a feeling that, hey, it may be a good break for us, but there's still hope?
It's funny. If you want to go back to the old Jim Mora line, playoffs, we're talking about playoffs. So the Raiders just got to worry about themselves, and the Raiders have to just look in the mirror and figure things out. They can't worry about what else is happening, because they're only two games out, let's face it, in a division right now that nobody's playing like they want to win it. But the Raiders can't worry about that. They can only worry about what they can control, and they have to get ready for Denver. Then they have the Giants at home. These are back-to-back winnable games at home, but then you enter that gauntlet where you go the Chiefs, Cowboys, Eagles, Chargers to end it. So the Raiders have to get some momentum going. They just need to worry about themselves and win these football games here that are in front of them before they can worry about anything else.
Usually this just falls down on party lines, per se, but Donald Trump weighs in on Marshawn Lynch. Any reaction in the Bay Area to that?
I think people are just kind of, okay, well, they kind of almost expected it, to be honest with you. It's almost like they expected Trump to react to LeVar Ball's comments as well. I don't think anybody pays much mind to it. It's Marchand being Marchand. This is what he's doing. Okay, the president happens to notice, and he's doing what he's been doing. But we've seen those tweets before. Nobody's watching. The ratings are down. They should suspend him for the year. It's almost as if like it's a little boy that cried wolf, because we've heard this before. And so it's nothing new, to be honest with you. And the only difference is that in this one, he actually stood for the Mexican national anthem, which was played, and sat for the American anthem. So I think that's the only change in this whole scenario, is that Marchand elected to stand for the Mexican national anthem when they were playing in Mexico City.
Kevin Durant, day-to-day ankle issues. Do we expect to see him in another return game to Oklahoma City?
I would put a strong a feeling that he will play against Oklahoma City. I think if this had been a playoff game or NBA Finals, we could have seen Durant last night, but they're playing the Brooklyn Nets, and it's all about, as we know, the second season for the Warriors, and about getting to the playoffs and then winning the championship. So if they have to sit a guy here or there for a game or two, I don't think Steve Kerr is concerned with it. But I do fully expect him to be ready to go for Oklahoma City coming up.
Roxy, we always appreciate the time.
My pleasure.
Roxy Bernstein, he's at 95.7 The Game and many other locations as well, as he joins us right here on the program.